Good morning, church. It's so good to see every one of y'all in church this morning. I know there's no place I'd rather be on December 29th than right here with you all. I want to begin this morning with a public service announcement. I was reading the news this morning, and I saw a news story that apparently 30 million calendars and desk diaries, you know, date books, have been printed with the wrong date for the May bank holiday. So if you have a calendar, if you get a new calendar for Christmas or whatever, you buy a new one, and you look and it says that May 4th is the May bank holiday, it's not actually, it's May 8th. And apparently, several people, many people, have already booked holidays for the May 4th weekend, thinking that it was the bank holiday when it wasn't, when in fact it's May 8th, because the government apparently changed the date after things had been printed. So be aware that come May bank holiday, there may be some confusion. Just like every year at this time, there is some confusion about whether Christmas is over or not. And always somebody asks, well, is Christmas, was it past Christmas? Is after Christmas, right? No. Christmas goes on till Epiphany. Well, what's Epiphany? When's Epiphany? I got to look that up. And, you know, I don't think that I need to tell any of you all, I'm sure I don't, that Christmas isn't over until a week from tomorrow, January 6th, Epiphany. So Merry Christmas on this first Sunday of Christmas. But I've seen lots of posts on Facebook about how proud people are that they got all their decorations down, got their tree put away on Boxing Day. And you know, it kind of makes me sad because I want Christmas. I want Christmas to last as long as possible, you know, because I like it. And you know, many of the folks, though, that have taken their decorations down on Boxing Day, they might have put them up, you know, at Thanksgiving or Halloween. So they've had them up for weeks, you know, before Christmas to them ends the day after. But unlike us, we got our tree decorated on Boxing Day because we've been a little busy. But so we're gonna leave it up for a while, you know. So, but in that kind of shuffle, in that kind of confusion about when the Christmas season starts, you know, sometimes Advent can get kind of lost in that. You know, when I was growing up, we didn't talk about Advent at our church. But I guess the truth is that people in general, just folks, get their cues about what time of year it is, about what season it is, from places other than church, from places other than the church calendar. Some people think of the seasons of the year in terms of sports. There's basketball season, there's baseball season, there's football season. Some hunters that I know think of the seasons of the year in terms of what they can hunt. There's duck season and rabbit season and deer season. But I think one of the biggest influences on people in general is the fact that we're a consumer society. And so all the places that we consume from, the shops where we buy our food and our clothes and our gifts, they let us know what time it is. And so, if there are after Christmas sales, it must be after Christmas. And have you noticed there's already Easter candy on the shelves? It's not even Lent. It's not even January, for that matter. But shops are not churches. They're shops, I know. And they're trying to sell as much merchandise as they can. I get that. And don't think I'm being critical of you if you've already taken down your decorations. Like I said, Pastor Tosh and I just got ours up Boxing Day, so we're running a little behind. But I do want to suggest that there is something very meaningful about knowing what's called the liturgical calendar, the church calendar, about being aware of the seasons in the church year, and taking time to reflect on them, taking the time to really internalize the meaning of seasons like Advent and Christmas and Epiphany and Easter and Pentecost. And if you don't know about those, there's a church calendar back there in the middle of the bulletin board. It's that colorful circle thing. And if you if you want to learn about it, let's learn about it together. Just let me know. But it's fascinating and inspiring, I think, the way that the church calendar, the way that the liturgical calendar is built around the life of Jesus. So Jesus is at the center, not just of the way we live, but even of the way we think about our time, our days and our weeks and our months and our seasons. So the Christian calendar, I think, correctly viewed, reminds us to take time to reflect on the meaning of the seasons. And I think there's a danger that Jesus gets lost when we just go along with the agenda of the masses, when we're just guided by commercial interests, by the forces of the market. When they provide our calendar, it can be very easy to forget the real meaning of the times and of the seasons. We risk losing Jesus when our calendars and our schedules and our timetables become simply secularized, when we just follow the crowd. Speaking of crowds, about a week and a half ago, Tasha and I went to Glasgow because I had to get a little work done on my mouth. And to get to the clinic, we had to walk through George Square. And it was all done up for the Glasgow Loves Christmas Market. And all the food vendors and the Ferris wheel and the carousel and the helter skelter and all that kind of stuff. And we had a little time before my appointment. We walked through there about 10 o'clock in the morning. And it was wonderful because there were almost no people there. It was just us. But things were open, you know, so we could sample the food and we didn't have to stand in any queues or anything. We could have ridden the Ferris wheel if we had wanted to, if it wasn't, what, 6 pounds a piece? But we didn't do that. So we were there for a while, and then we went back after my appointment was over in the afternoon. And as the day went on, there were more and more and more people and more people. And after a while, it was starting to get dark. Around 3 o'clock or so, I guess, when it was getting dark. But it was just plain crowded, you know. And I wasn't feeling particularly festive because my face was swollen and numb. And I said to Tasha, I think I'm ready to go. I'm getting a little claustrophobia. She said, claustrophobia? Don't you mean claustrophobia? I said, no, I mean claustrophobia. It's a medical term for when you get anxious because there's too many people being all close to you. I said, if you hadn't heard of it, it's because I just made it up. But I tell you, the biggest crowds I ever remember seeing in all my life was about 20 years ago. I wanted to go to Disney World with my daughters and some of our family, some of our relatives, and I had the bright idea that on the day after Thanksgiving, people would probably want to be at home with their families. So they wouldn't want to go to Disney World. So I imagined that the park would be almost deserted. See, we didn't have the internet back then. We didn't have Google. Because if we did have, I'd have been able to look it up. And I would have seen that the day after Thanksgiving is, in fact, perhaps the busiest day at Disney World. It's the most crowded. But we went, and we endured like mile-long queues and wall-to-wall people. I'm telling you, it was just, you can't imagine how crowded it was. But we did it anyway, and it was fun, except for one part, and that part was absolutely terrifying. About halfway into the day, we all decided that we'd walk with the crowd through Minnie Mouse's house. That's Minnie Mouse's house there. So imagine about 10,000 people in that picture, and you kind of get some idea of what it was like. So we stood in line, and we walked through the house, kind of following the crowd, you know, kind of being, you know, swept along with them. And when we all got through and came out, I realized that I had been assuming that my 4-year-old daughter, Caroline, was with my parents, and she wasn't. That's when panic set in. She wasn't with any of the other family either. She wasn't with any of the relatives. She was somewhere in this mass of humanity. I get a sick feeling in my stomach still thinking about it. But as quickly as I could, I maneuvered my way through all these people, kind of pushing my way back into Minnie Mouse's house. And when I got into Minnie Mouse's living room, there was Caroline standing by a great big overstuffed chair, just looking around, you know. She had no idea that she was lost at all. But I tell you what, I sure did. And she was only lost for about 2 minutes at most. But they were two of the most absolutely unpleasant, painful moments of my entire life. Can you imagine? Can you imagine what kind of parent would lose their child, even for a minute or two, assuming that they were with other family members, when they didn't know for sure? What kind of parent would do that? Well, parents like Mary and Joseph, as they're described in Luke 2, verses 41 through 50. Let's read that together. That's in your sermon notes there. Now, every year, his parents went to Jerusalem for the festival of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, Luke's talking about Jesus here, they went up as usual for the festival. When the festival was ended and they started to return, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem, but his parents didn't know it. Assuming that he was in the group of travelers, they went a day's journey. Then they started to look for him among their relatives and friends. When they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem to search for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. And when his parents saw him, they were astonished. And his mother said to him, "Child, why have you treated us like this? Look, your father and I have been searching for you in great anxiety." He said to them, "Why were you searching for me? Didn't you know that I must be in my father's house?" But they didn't understand what he said to them. Now, last week, Pastor Tasha introduced us to several characteristics of Mary. But today, we get to see another side to her personality. But what I want to concentrate on this morning, what I want to suggest this morning, is that there are at least three ways presented here in which we all can risk losing Jesus. Misunderstanding who Jesus is, what he means, and what following him, what the Christian life is all about. So let's look first at the general situation in these first verses. So Joseph and Mary and Jesus are going to Jerusalem with a group of travelers for the Passover festival. And they've done this every year. So Jesus has done it for 12 years. It's Jesus' 12th trip with them. It's nothing new. They go up as usual. But at the end of the festival, Jesus decides to stay in Jerusalem, and his parents assume that he's with the group, but he's not. And the group travels a full day's journey before they realize what's happened, and they start to look for him among the group of relatives and friends. Now, let me tell you, I know exactly what that feels like. And I also always think of Kevin McAllister's parents. You know that movie Home Alone? They're on a plane to Paris, and they realize, we forgot Kevin. And it's going to take some effort to get back to him. Well, Mary and Joseph have gone a day's journey, even before they start looking. They assumed he was with them. They just followed the crowd. And so that's my first point. We risk losing Jesus when we follow the crowd. When we take our eyes off Jesus and put them on other people. When we are just moved along on our journey by the pressures of the people around us. When we just let them direct our paths toward their destinations. We certainly see this during Advent and Christmas, when secularism and commercialism takes Christmas and makes it all about, you know, decorations and festivities and what they call giving, which I think is hilarious because what they mean by giving is really buying, right? And it focuses all its attention on one single day. So, you know, you can talk to people who say they love Christmas without really ever understanding what Christmas really is. And Jesus can get lost in all that other stuff. There's nothing wrong with loving all that other stuff. I love all the decorations and the festivities and the gifts and all that kind of stuff. But in the end, it's just stuff. It's just the secular trappings of a holy season. And if we lose Jesus amidst all that stuff, we've lost what can give our lives direction. And we'll just be moved along by the weight of cultural expectation, by the weight of the crowd, by the ways that the world around us does things. We risk losing Jesus when we follow the crowd. But it's not just the secular crowd that can lose Jesus. Mary and Joseph were following tradition, religious tradition. In going to Jerusalem with friends and family, and they do this every year, during all the activity and the tradition and the ritual, they assumed that Jesus was with them somewhere. Isn't that interesting? It's possible to follow tradition and rituals and activities, to do the religious things that crowds of religious people do, and still lose Jesus when we just assume that he's in there somewhere. So my second point is this. We risk losing Jesus when we merely follow tradition. Our religious traditions and rituals, the words that we say and the things that we do, even that liturgical calendar that gives meaning to the days and weeks and seasons, these can be sources of great comfort, tremendous expressions of faith, powerful ways of pointing us toward Jesus, even means of grace that facilitate the movement of the Holy Spirit. But if we take our eyes off Jesus, if we forget that he is to be in and through all that we do and say, then traditions and rituals can become hollow, meaningless activities. If we follow our traditions out of a sense of obligation, just going through the motions, or if we mistakenly believe that doing and saying the things that make us religious also make us righteous, that doing those religious things is what saves us and not the grace afforded by the work of Jesus on the cross and the resurrection, then we have lost Jesus. One need look no further than the interactions of Jesus with the Pharisees to know that being religious is not the same as being righteous. But wait a minute, it's not just religious traditions, but political and cultural traditions. If we take our eyes off Jesus and think that conservatism or liberalism or centrism or progressivism or socialism or capitalism or Marxism or any ism, even Wesleyanism or Arminianism or Anglo-Catholicism or any of those isms, when we put our faith in, when we follow any of those traditions instead of the way of the cross of Jesus, we're likely to find ourselves led astray. We risk losing Jesus when we merely follow tradition. Now finally, let's look at what happens when Mary and Joseph find Jesus. When they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem to search for him. This is verse 45. After 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. And when his parents saw him, they were astonished. And his mother said to him, "Child, why have you treated us this way? Look, your father and I have been searching for you in great anxiety." Now you may remember last week that Tasha said in her sermon, and we mentioned at the Bible study on Sunday night, that in Matthew's gospel, Mary doesn't say anything. But in Luke's gospel, she says a lot. Not just those soaring, majestic, powerful words in the Magnificat, but also very common, very candid, very human words like these. We can imagine almost any mother saying words like these to her child who's been lost. Child, why have you treated us like this? Look, your father and I have been looking for you in great anxiety. That word there for great anxiety is adunau. It's where we get the medical suffix odinia. Odinia means pain. And, you know, physicians, I know because I was taught this in medical school, physicians don't use the language of our patients. We use different language so our patients know that we are smarter than they are, that we know more than they do. So we don't say that a patient's feet hurt. We say they have pododynia. You see, what that means is their feet hurt. Odinao, that word in the New Testament is used here for anxiety, means torment, anguish, great pain and suffering. It's often accompanied by mourning, crying out, and weeping. That word is used elsewhere for great pain, even agony, even the agony of hell itself. So Mary is acting exactly as we would expect a parent to act, who has lost her child for at least 3 days. I lost my daughter for just a minute or two, and I was in this kind of agony. I can't imagine what Mary and Joseph were feeling after 3 days, maybe more. It's unclear whether that 3 days was in Jerusalem or whether it was 3 days total. And yes, you should think that those 3 days when he's lost foreshadow the 3 days in the tomb coming up. But Mary very clearly blames Jesus for causing her anxiety and pain. She says to him, "How could you? Why have you treated us like this?" Clearly, she sees this as Jesus' fault. She expected him to follow her on her way. They expected Jesus to follow them when they left, and he didn't. So my last point is this. We risk losing Jesus when we expect him to follow us. When we expect him to follow us on our path for our purposes and plans and not the other way around. Christians are called to be followers of Jesus, but sometimes we hear folks who suggest that Jesus is a means of self-fulfillment, a way of getting all the things you've ever dreamed about and plan to achieve health and wealth and happiness, your best life now. Well, let me tell you, if you expect Jesus to follow you down your path, then you have it backwards. The Christian life is about handing over our lives to the will of God, to the coming kingdom, taking up our cross and following Jesus. Not taking up our preconceived plans and schemes and agendas and goals and expecting Jesus to help us achieve them. Expecting Jesus to follow us. Does that mean Christians are unfulfilled and unhappy? No. What that means is what God has in store for you is beyond what you could plan, beyond what you could dream up. Following Jesus will not get you all you've ever dreamed of. It is beyond what you could dream of. More than you could ask for or even imagine. Let me say that again. Following Jesus will not get you all you've ever dreamed of. It is beyond what you could dream of. More than you could ask or even imagine. 3 years ago, if I had told you that it's my plan for Tasha and I to wind up in Scotland, in particular in Largs, and we're going to be pastors, both of us, and that's the plan. Well, you'd have been justified in saying, well, that's great, but that's also impossible. And it wasn't just impossible, it was beyond anything we could have dreamed of. We didn't even know where Largs was. And how would we ever get to Scotland? But nevertheless, here we are. Because we didn't say, look, Jesus, here's our plan, you just come along with us. No, we said, Jesus, what's the plan? What's the next step? We'll go that far and then we'll see a little further. you take the lead and we'll follow. And that's how we got here, and I hope it's how you got here as well. What I know is that we are all here at this place and at this time in this church, and we can say to Jesus, lead us where you want. Let your Spirit guide us. Not our will, but yours. As we heard Mary say last week, here I am. Let it be. Expecting Jesus to follow you on your path is a recipe for frustration and anxiety and pain. Odunayo. But following Jesus brings joy and assurance and a peace that passes all understanding. And so, this morning, this first Sunday of Christmas, I hope that we can be reminded of the ways that we risk losing Jesus in our lives, in our church, in our community, in our time, in our daily activities, in history itself. We risk losing Jesus when we follow the crowd, when we merely follow tradition, when we expect Jesus to follow us on our path, because we are called to be followers of Jesus. And let's remember that we are invited to be a part of God's story of incarnation and redemption. The story of a God who empties himself out into history, into real flesh and blood life, in order that all creation might be reconciled, in order that all humanity might know the peace of the kingdom and the good news of the gospel. This week, let's tell somebody about it. Let's live it out. Let's not lose Jesus. Pastor Tasha, would you come and lead us?